It's told that a young man once went to the great Greek philosopher Socrates to learn the art of oratory, the art of public speaking. And on being introduced, the young man talked so incessantly that finally Socrates said to him, "I'm going to have to charge you double price." The young man was taken aback and he said, "Why are you going to have to charge me double?" And he said, "Well, first of all, I'm going to have to teach you how to hold your tongue. And then second, I'm going to have to teach you how to use it." The proverb writer tells us that even a fool is counted wise when he holds his tongue. When he shuts his lips, the text says, he's considered perceptive. Proverbs 17, verse 28. The Ecclesiastes writer said in chapter 5, verse 3, that a fool is known by his many words. Excuse me. The psalmist speaks of keeping one's mouth with a bridle in Psalm 39, verse 1. James talks in James chapter 1, verse 26, about the need of bridling one's tongue. All of us say things that we wish we hadn't said. In the third chapter of James, James says, "We all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." People can destroy years of accomplishment with a few careless words. Recall the short song of the women back in 1 Samuel, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s, and Saul's life, and by extension David's life, was changed forever with just those few words. The things we say can go far in benefiting others. The things that we say can go far in destroying others. We shouldn't underestimate the power of the tongue. There are certainly dangers in having what the Bible refers to that we've already seen as the unbridled tongue. An unbridled tongue, James tells us, can render one's I can't use my tongue tonight. That's better than using it badly, I suppose. But can render one's religion as vain. Refer to that passage a few moments ago, James 1:26. If anyone among you thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is vain or empty or useless or without any force. An unbridled tongue is a source of great trouble. Proverbs 21:23 says, "Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles." Obviously, if you don't guard your mouth and tongue, then you invite trouble. Who has not gotten themselves, anybody here who hasn't gotten themselves into trouble with foot and mouth disease by saying things that you shouldn't say? Who here has not been troubled by somebody else's use, bad use of a tongue, spoken about you or against you? The tongue has a lot of power for good. The tongue has a lot of power for evil. There's a poem I'm sure many of you are familiar with, "How Children Learn," or "How Children Learn to Live." Don't know the exact title, may depend on who you consult. It's not completely about the tongue, but it would certainly include the use of the tongue. It says, "If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If children live with hostility, they learn to fight. If children live with ridicule, they learn to be insecure. If children live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If children live with tolerance, they learn to be patient. If children live with encouragement, they learn confidence. If children live with praise, they learn to appreciate. If children live with fairness, they learn justice. If children live with security, they learn to have faith. If they live with approval, they learn to like themselves. If they live with discipline, they learn to have respect for authority. If they live with acceptance and friendship, they learn to find love in the world. We're going to talk, it's going to be a simple lesson. If I say that, my lessons are usually about a sixth grade level, so you know it's time to hand out the pacifiers. It is going to be a simple lesson. We're just going to look at some of the tongues, if you will, that the Bible refers to, describes the use of the tongue in a couple of different ways, and speak about different kinds, if you will, of unbridled tongues. For example, the Bible talks about the hasty tongue. Proverbs 29, verse 20 says, "Do you see a man hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him." Somebody just itching, they just can't wait to say, they've always got to have something, and it comes out, and it comes out so quickly. There's read about a talkative woman who once was attending a service that was being preached by Billy Sunday, the famous evangelist. And she tried to justify the quickness of her own tongue by saying it passes, it's done with quickly. And he said, "So is a shotgun blast. You know, just because it happens quickly and it's over with quickly, the damage that's done can still be tremendous." Proverbs 29:11 says, "A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back." Some people just have to let you know everything that's on their mind. "Do not be rash," Ecclesiastes 5, verse 2 says. "Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven and you on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few." Then there's the lying tongue. And we don't need definitions for a lot of these, but the definitions are interesting. "A false statement or action, especially one made with the intent to deceive," which of course lets us know that you can lie in a variety of ways. "But you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor," Exodus 20:16. This has always been wrong. Ephesians 4:25, Paul says, "Put away lying, each one speak the truth with his neighbor. Do not lie to one another," he says in Colossians 3, the parallel passage. We know the fate of all liars, Revelation 21, verse 8. "The cowardly, the unbelieving, sexually immoral, and all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire, which burns with fire and brimstone." Many kinds of lies, suppressing the truth, or everything that person said was true, they just omitted some quite significant facts. Mental reservations, white lies. It doesn't really matter what color it is or what adjective you put in front of it. A lie is still a lie. There's the gossiping, tale-bearing tongue. To indulge in idle talk or rumors about others. Proverb writer tells us that this promotes strife. Proverbs 26:20, "Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. Where there is no talebearer, strife ceases." Again, one of those backward approaches there. Proverbs 16:28 tells us that it separates friends. "A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends." It's hurtful. It wounds. Proverbs 18, verse 8, "The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body." A Jewish tradition reads wounds in there. Who has not inflicted or suffered such wounds? And contrary to popular opinion, gossip is not dignified because it's the truth. All gossip, even that which is true, is equally damaging. Someone said, "I like the parrot. It's the only creature gifted with the power of speech that's content to repeat just what it hears without trying to make a good story out of it. This little poem I came across some decades ago. I'm not a big fan of poetry. I don't know if that's good or bad in some of your eyes, but just some of the extended, I just want to say, get on with it. Just tell me what you're trying to say, you know. But anyway, I like this poem. It says, it's called Gossip Town. I may have already said that. Have you ever heard of Gossip Town on the shores of Falsehood Bay, where old Dame Rumor with rustling gown is going the livelong day? It isn't far to Gossip Town for people who want to go. Idleness train will take you there in just an hour or so. The thoughtless road is a popular route, and most folks start this way. It's steep downgrade. If you don't watch out, you'll land in Falsehood Bay. You'll glide through the valley of Vicious Town into the tunnel of hate. Then crossing the Add To Bridge, you walk right in to the city gate. The principal street is called They Say. I've heard is the public well. And the breezes that blow from Falsehood Bay are laden with Don't You Tell. In the midst of the town is Tell Park. You're never quite safe while there, for its owner is Madam Suspicious Remark, who lives on the street Don't Care. Just back of the park is Slander Row. 'Twas there that good name dies, pierced by a dart from jealousy's bow in the hands of envious pride. For Gossip Town, peace long since fled, but envy, strife, and woe, as well as sorrow, you find instead if you ever chance to go. Then there's the evil speaking tongue. Problem with this tongue is that it usually backfires on us. It's told that a lady once criticized her neighbor for hanging dirty clothes on the line, and then she later discovered that the clothes weren't streaked with dirt. It was her window that she was looking through at the neighbor's clothes that was streaked and dirty. James 4, verse 11 says, "Do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge." 1 Peter 2, verse 1, "Lay aside all malice, all guile, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking." Ephesians 4, 31, "Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you." Will Durant once said, "To speak ill of others is a dishonest way of praising ourselves." Then there's the swearing, cursing tongue, whether it's taking God's name in vain or the more dignified off-color language or remarks, it's still wrong. Paul says in Ephesians 4:29, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." The fifth chapter, verses 3 and 4, he says, "Fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you, as is fitting for saints. Neither jesting, neither foolishness, rather, filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting." And then there's the murmuring tongue. This is defined as giving audible expression to unwarranted dissatisfaction. Like that. Giving audible expression to unwarranted dissatisfaction. Of course, we know how to deal with this. Everything that we complain about and murmur about is dissatisfaction that is warranted. So we don't have a problem with that definition. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 10, Paul, talking about the Israelites, said, "Do not murmur as some of them did." And he continues. And of course, The Israelites wandering in the wilderness are said to have murmured on various occasions. They murmured about what they had to eat. They murmured about what they didn't have to eat. They murmured about what they didn't have to drink. They murmured about their leadership. And God was saying that their dissatisfaction was unwarranted. I don't know about you, but out there traipsing around in the wilderness, year after year after year, no indoor plumbing, no quick marts or Casey's or quick stops of any kind, no entertainment of the sorts that we know, none of the amenities and the technological advances that we know, if their dissatisfaction was unwarranted, where can we put our dissatisfaction? Is it somehow more legitimate than theirs? Do all things without murmuring and disputing, Paul said in Philippians 2, verse 14. And remember, Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. In Psalm 39, verse 1, looked at it earlier, the psalmist said, I will keep my mouth with a bridle. Or some translations say, I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle. How can we go about applying this bridle? James tells us that no man can tame the tongue, but we certainly need to keep it under guard. We read of wild beasts that have been tamed, which have suddenly been guilty of unprovoked attack. I think the tongue is something like that. It's not something that we can ever just say, I've got that mastered, I don't have to worry about it anymore. There's a little poem of sorts, you may be familiar with it. It says, if wisdom's ways you wisely seek, catch up with myself here. If wisdom's ways you wisely seek, five things observe with care. Of whom you speak, to whom you speak, and how, and when, and where. But it's not enough to learn what we should not say. We also need to learn of the benefits of the proper use of the tongue. Proverbs 18:21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Proverbs 25:11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. I'm sure all of us have been stung by criticism, and I'm sure we've all been encouraged and elevated by words of kindness. It was Mark Twain who said, I can live 2 months on a good compliment. Mr. Anon E. Muss once said, to be able to speak several languages can be an invaluable asset, but the ability to keep your mouth shut in any language is priceless. I once read that on a windswept hill in an English country churchyard stands a drab gray slate tombstone. The faint etchings on it read, beneath this stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue. That's supposed to be funny. Maybe I didn't read it correctly. For the sake of our souls, for the glory of God, for the benefit of others, may we not wait until we die before we begin to hold our tongues. And may we learn to use it to strengthen and to encourage others and to glorify God. Let's stand and sing the song together.